Welcome to Mignolaversity Audio, a hopefully semi-regular podcast we'll be doing here at Multiversity. My name is Brian Salvatore. I'm calling in from Ringwood, New Jersey, and with me on the line is...
Mark, Tweet Al. I'm calling in from Brisbane.
And how are you doing this morning for you, this evening for me?
It's been a long day, but anyway...
I'm sorry. It's been a long day for me, too, so... But you're much newer in the day than I am, so hopefully
your
day gets better.
Yeah, still got so much more to go.
So we're going to talk about just sort of the goings-on of the Mignolaverse for 2014, talk about some of our favorites from the year, and talk about, hopefully, what's in store for next year. So before we get any further, how long have you been reading Mignola books? When did you first come to the characters?
I actually got introduced to them in university. At that particular point, I'd read Tintin, Asterix, and newspaper comic strips. That was it. That was the limit. It was my first introduction to American comics, you know, of that style.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It set the bar pretty high.
Yeah, certainly. Hellboy is a character I was aware of long before I read any particular Hellboy stories. I've been reading comics, you know, on and off, but mainly on... since 1987, maybe, when I was 5 years old. So, you know, Hellboy has been around most of my comic reading life, and so I've been aware of the character, but it wasn't until I started writing for Multiversity in 2011 that I read more than just a couple of Hellboy stories. And then I dove in, you know, pretty deep. So, but this year has been a really interesting year for the Mignola books. It's been a year of surprisingly little Hellboy. We only got...
Yeah, there was only one Hellboy in Hell.
One Hellboy in Hell, a couple of Dark Horse Presents pieces, and then we got him in December in the Hellboy and the BPRD start of the series. Hellboy was certainly not the most focal character this year. Who would you say was the most... maybe the most important character in the Mignolaverse this year? Who's the one character you felt like this was their year?
That's a tough one, but for me, Liz was the one who really stepped up and just, like, became something you'd never seen before,
you
know?
Yeah. Is Liz a character you have a lot of affinity for, or what?
She's a character, actually, I've been wanting this for a long time, because all the way through Plague of Frogs, she's, you know, she was this female character who was being used by men, and so it's really good to have her return to the BPRD because she wants to be there, and then kicking butt.
Yeah, that is a very cool part of her character. I feel like there was a need for her to just kind of step up and be something, I don't want to say more than just another human, but because one of the great things about the Bureau in the last 2 or 3 years has been the influx of important human characters. Mm. And I think it's been great to see characters like Enos and Jiroko. Become these really important characters, but I think that there's something really cool about still having the supernatural characters there somewhat too.
Mm. And Liz is also kind of, oh sorry.
No, I was saying, Liz kind of straddles that line, you know, between the two types of characters, and I think she's really important for that reason.
Mm. I also find it kind of interesting the way, you know, like they're gradually becoming less normal, like, you know, with Ted Howard's introduced as a regular guy, and then suddenly he's this crazy guy running around with a Hyperborean sword.
Right. All right, so what sort of struck you this year? What was one thing that you take away from this year that you did not expect?
Reign of Black Flame was just like, you know that the Prospect Park sequence?
You mean my favorite sequence of 2014? Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
The one that you have on your wall, you lucky bastard.
Yeah, that kind of blew my mind. it's one of those things where, you know, like, I've been impressed by James Harren and everything, but at that moment it was just like, whoa, you just, like, exceeded all my expectations.
See, you have to understand, I know Prospect Park. I've been there many, many times. I know the gateway he was drawing in the beginning of that sequence. And so that adds another level to it. For me, personally, just, you know, having a place that is relatively close to my home... that I've spent time, that I have fond memories of, seeing that place so depressingly overrun was heartbreaking. It was great.
Yeah, there was a couple of moments like that as well. I suppose we'll get to that later, but anyway. Yeah, no, that was one of the things that really jumped out at me. Overall, actually, the big one for me, like, is in terms of just being completely different, was Witchfinder. Like, that's just been a book that's been sitting on the shelf for a long time, and then for it to come back and be so completely different in terms of its visual and with a whole new team of writers, it, I don't know, it really came to life.
Now, I am woefully ignorant in Witchfinder. I actually just picked up the trades very recently to go back, hopefully, over this Christmas break and get myself caught up. How did the new creative team do, in your opinion, with the property?
Well, first of all, it was the best thing that Tyler Crook's done. It was amazing.
Wow.
Okay. No, seriously, he was so damn good in that. I really enjoyed seeing him just, like, go, hey, I'm really comfortable with this. Let's see what I can do. You know, it was, especially the fourth issue, there's all this stuff with the fog and everything, and just he and Dave Stewart together just did amazing stuff there. In terms of the story and everything, you know, like, it was really strong. It like introduced a couple of elements that'll no doubt be playing out in I don't know what, probably Abe Sapien, I have no idea. You haven't read it, damn. There's sorry. All this stuff with the eels that's probably going to become important later on at some point.
But do you feel like they've, I know you said it's a completely different approach than the last creative team took, do you feel like this is a positive step forward for the property?
Yeah, because it may, well, actually, the thing that really struck me was the characters' voices. Because, like, you know, like, it's Britain, you know, like, it's supposed to be English and old-fashioned and everything. And they pushed it a lot further in this one, and it didn't feel off. It actually felt more like Witchfinder than it had before, if that makes sense.
Oh, that's great. That's actually really good to hear. What did you think overall about the sort of characters on the fringes, the Lobster Johnsons, the Sledgehammer series? How did you feel about those properties this year?
Sledgehammer's insane. I love Sledgehammer.
So do I. I kind of wish they would get Jason Latour back. I love Lawrence Campbell, but I loved seeing Jason Latour do that work also.
Mm, yeah, the two of them were both really great. I mean, but yeah, we're going to see a lot of Lawrence Campbell in the future, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's definitely room for more Jason Latour. I don't know. There was something about his first one that just immediately, wowed me.
Yeah. What about the Lobster? Are you a, like, when I started getting sort of deeper into the Mignola stuff, Lobster Johnson's character I really latched onto, but David and I have been talking about this. We feel like the character has gotten a bit one note lately, and that the miniseries all seem about an issue or two too long. Do you agree with that?
I find actually that when it comes to the the shorter stories, you know, like, if you're just going to read them one issue at a time. Mm-hmm. But when it, you know, when you're picking up a trade, those longer stories really work. It's just, I don't know, for some reason they just don't seem to flow as well when they're split into issues.
I think part of it is that the character is a relatively silent one. And
well,
so
that's the thing. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, yeah, he's, like, the story isn't even about him, really. Like, it's about everybody watching him. You know, like, you don't experience anything from his point of view. The whole story is seen through the eyes of other characters. So the strength of the story depends on which character you're looking, you know, whose eyes you're looking through.
But isn't Sledgehammer the same way?
Sledgehammer kind of is the same way, except you also get to go inside his head, and you get see, you know, Redding talking to Fields and all that sort of stuff, and really get a sense of who that character is. You have no idea with the Lobster. You know, like, there was actually, in the article that came out very recently, the sketchbook, I highlighted my favorite page from the recent Lobster Johnson arc. And it's just a moment when Cindy's looking at Lobster Johnson, the Lobster, and, yeah, she can't read him at all. She has no idea if he's going to kill her or be fine with it. You know, like, she's just kind of, you know, you sort of realize she doesn't really know him at all.
Right. I actually find her to be a fascinating character.
Yeah, actually.
She kind of reminds me of the little we've seen of Peggy Carter in the Avengers films. You know, just sort of this brassy woman who is ahead of her time in terms of her, you know, her willingness to stand up to men and that sort of thing. But I also feel like she is not, she's a pretty fearless character. Mm. And that's a really fun character to pair with the Lobster, I think.
Yeah. Well, she's one character, actually, I kind of wouldn't mind seeing an entire issue just based from her point of view. You know, you never really follow anyone else, you just see everything she's seeing as the story unfolds.
Right. Is there anything else outside... Let's talk about Abe Sapien for a second. I mentioned to you before the call that I'm a little bit behind on Abe Sapien, but one of my sort of observations about the book has been that it is a... it's a book that is content to take its time.
Yeah.
And while I respect that, there are issues that go by that I feel like absolutely nothing happens. Do you feel those same frustrations, or is that... I mean, I can be an impatient reader, and I'm aware of that.
Yeah.
So is this a me issue, or do you somewhat agree?
Well, at the beginning of the year, when it was... it just finished doing... The Shape of Things to Come and started on and was going through To the Last Man, I think I was getting really impatient then.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a story that I think I ranted about quite a bit. And then when I read it in the trade, it read a lot better. It's, I don't know, there's some things like, I feel like they introduce a point at the end of an issue, it gets picked up in the next one, and it was just like, if they'd taken those two points and put them in a single issue, they would have flowed a little better.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
I have no problem with the book taking its time, though. I feel like I'm getting more in the zone with that book as it goes along.
What do you think about the rotating art team?
I love the art team, actually.
Me too.
Like, Max Fiamara has been blowing my mind, especially. Like, the stuff he's been doing with Grace. The latest issue that just came out... there's a page in that... you're so behind, damn it.
I know, I'm sorry.
I
blame my daughter. I blame my daughter.
Yeah. Well, you know the character Grace, of course.
Of course,
how,
yeah.
Like, she's got this backstory and she hasn't told Abe. And you know sooner or later she's going to. Well, she does. And when they get to that moment, it's just like... It's extremely simple layout where it's just on her face talking to Abe. You don't get to see his reaction. You just get to see her go through all these different emotions. And he's just so, he's got those emotions, like, perfect. You know, like, there's just little gestures where, like, I think Grace has, like, got her hand resting on her cheek, and you can tell, like, that there's, like, that drop in her stomach because her hand lowers in the next panel, and things like that, you know? It's incredibly subtle.
Yeah, and, I wonder how much of that is coming from the mind of an editor, who is much more used to looking at the long term of things versus the short term of things. You know, Scott Alley's job in a lot of ways is to look at the entire chessboard, right? Not just look at the move that's being made right now, but look at the whole big thing. And so I wonder if, because of his history as an editor, he is more content to let the pieces slowly move than somebody else would be.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, actually, because, there was the To the Last Man story was this... zombie thing where all these zombies attack the town and then it was just kind of left hanging and, you know, just sort of felt anticlimactic.
Right.
And it was just dangling and dangling. And now in the latest arc, it's picking all that up again. And, you know, that's a year later.
Right, right. And, I think the benefit of being a writer in the Mignola books is that you have a relatively stable reading audience. Mm. The books have their readership, and the readership's pretty solid. So I think maybe they feel like, well, we trust our readers to be with us a year later on this.
Yeah.
Where a lot of other books can't say that.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk for just a minute and then get into sort of our favorite things of the year. Into BPRD as a whole. This year we had The Reign of the Black Flame, The Devil's Wings, The Broken Equation, The Grind one-shot, and now we're two into Flesh and Stone. So, of those arcs, I think we're both going to say Reign of the Black Flame was our favorite, correct?
Reign of the Black Flame had my favorite moments, but honestly, my favorite was Grind.
Well, okay. You and David are both very, very... By the way, we keep referencing David. David Harper is sort of the third piece of this equation, but he couldn't make this chat work. What was it about Grind that particularly spoke to you?
I really like seeing the BPRD from a point of view that's outside and looking in. I don't know why that works for me so much, but after I read that issue, because I was writing Hell Notes about that kind of thing at the time, I have no idea what, but yeah, I was looking back and I kind of noticed a pattern where, like, you know, some of my favorite stuff was always from the outside looking in. In particular, Gods from ages ago, mm-hmm. when you were looking at the point of view of these kids who are traveling around on trains and everything, and how they see, you know, Abe Sapien when he first appears, this guy with a gun and everything, and how he could look frightening. I don't know, that there's something about a different point of view that amuses me.
I think it makes a lot of sense, and I think it's something that the book is wise to show us now and then. Because it gets real, it gets really easy to get used to the idea of a fish man or a guy in a containment suit, and then it's something totally different to think about what that would be like to see that in the real world for the first time.
Yeah, so, it's nice to do it occasionally. It's one of those things, if they did it more frequently, it'd probably drive me mad, but occasionally it's really nice.
Yeah, I mean, I loved Grind, too, but to me, Reign of the Black Flame was my favorite thing this year. To me, it had the best of all worlds. It had some absolutely crazy action sequences where James Harren just let his insanity come out and, you know, just have, you know, almost like video game boss scenes, you know, between people. But then you also had that heartbreaking Prospect Park scene. You had Yosef basically proclaiming his friendship for Johan, which sounds so silly to say, but that was a very touching moment.
Yeah, no, that was actually one thing I remember reading your reviews of that, and kind of going, like, you know, you guys were very distrustful of Yosef until then.
Yeah.
And I was kind of going, but can't you see he cares about Johan? So Johan, you know.
But it just seemed to me like that was him going above and beyond where I think I personally felt the character was. And I really enjoyed that. I thought it was a very nice touch.
I don't know. I felt like, because, you know, the character first appeared in, The Abyssal Plane. And that particular story, you know, there was this strong attachment to the wife. He was a character very much ruled by his emotions and a sense of duty. Mm-hmm. And so, for me, the whole thing with Johan, that was just a natural extension of that.
Right. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Is there anything else overall you want to get to before we get to some of our other favorites of the year?
Well, I did want to mention that, you know, like, the Grind being better than the Black Flame is just very, very close.
Right. I mean, really, I don't think... I think if I had to grade the completed arcs so far, I think the Broken Equation might have been my least favorite so far, but that's still a damn good comic. You know, those two issues are great. It's just that, to me, Reign of the Black Flame, The Devil's Wings, and Grind are all probably superior to that.
Yeah, well, it's one of those years where, you know, I feel like you're just picking between favorites.
Exactly. All right, let's talk about artists for a second. Who do you think was your favorite Mignolaverse artist this year?
Max Fiamara had some really awesome moments, but it is James Harren. For, like, the Prospect Park scene, I mean... It's pretty obvious. I love that moment when I went off and bought four pages of it.
Yeah, somehow I'm going to get those from you in a friendly wager one day or something. No, I'm just teasing. But that is an incredible sequence.
There's like, actually, that was really cool getting them because got these bits and I was looking at them on a light box so that, you know, I could see the ink work that had been put underneath whiteout and stuff, and there was this, like, dark patch. Flip it over, and there was an extra panel on the back. Yeah, it's just really cool seeing this alternate panel that wasn't in the comic. And, yeah, it's just really, really cool.
I had the pleasure of meeting James this year at New York Comic Con. And he was this, like, incredibly calm, really nice guy. And you just think, you draw the most fucked up shit. I don't know how you're this, like, normal dude who then can draw Howard's going absolutely crazy and destroying everything.
It does seem that way, though. Like, the artists that draw the most messed up stuff always seem so timid to me.
Yeah.
You know, like, when you see them in real life on a panel or something, they're just talking very, very timidly and calmly. They seem like really nice people.
Yeah. Harren is definitely my favorite. Although, I will say this. This is the year, I think, I've really missed Mignola the most.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think we got spoiled last year by getting five issues of Hellboy and Hell within more or less a calendar year, from December through December of 2012 was when Hellboy and Hell 1 came out, and then so within a calendar year we got just about, you know, five of those, and then we only got one issue this year, And I think as I get older and as Mignola gets older, I appreciate his minimalist style even more. And this year I felt like as great as a lot of the artists were, I was really hoping to get more Mignola.
Yeah.
But I feel that way all the time. There's never
enough. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be good next year. We'll get a two-parter.
Oh, is that the...
He's already said that in a previous interview that the next trade will be, the first one that we've already got, then a two-parter, and then another two-parter.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
So, yeah, when we do get it, we'll get two issues back-to-back at least, so that'll be cool.
Yeah, that is good. What about your favorite individual issue? Not a moment like Prospect Park, but individual issue of the last year.
That was one where, once again, I was torn between Grind and The Garden, which was the issue that introduced Grace. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to have to go to the Garden. Max Fiumara did an excellent job. I liked Scott Alley's writing in that one. But the thing that really stood out for me, of all things, was Dave Stewart's colors. He introduced this set of palettes for all these different moments. And if you watch through the stories that follow with Grace, he occasionally reprises them. So it's like you can look at those exact moments, and then two issues later, you can see those same colors again for that moment. Kind of accessing that emotional mood again.
Maybe this is recency bias on my part, but I think my favorite individual issue was Hellboy and the BPRD number one.
Mm.
There was something about that book that, to me, brought me back to the earliest Hellboy stories. I don't mean earliest in terms of when he was a boy, but I mean the earliest, the first two library editions.
Yeah. It's kind of everything up to Conqueror Worm, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. It just feels to me so... It brings a nostalgia in me from when I first was reading those stories, but I also think that Maleev just did an incredible job. Mm-hmm. I mean, an absolutely incredible job. And, I think it's really nice to have a little hope in these books, because it's been pretty bleak the last year or two.
Yeah, it has.
And to go back and have some hope to the proceedings, I think that's a really nice thing.
Mm. I noticed it in Yosef, because he's always been this character for, the last 2 years or so. Whenever someone is doing their little bleak speech of, everything's so bad and everything, he's always the one going, we've got to, look at the victories we've got and take heart in that. He's not, an optimist, but he turns things up a little bit, from this bleak point of view. And ever since he got beat up in Reign of the Black Flame, he returned, suddenly he's going the other way now. It's like something broke in him in that story.
I agree.
It's a shame to see, because I like him.
Yeah. What about your least favorite single issue of the year?
That's going to go back to... That would probably be the last part of To the Last Man.
Okay.
It was just one of those ones where it had a theme going all the way through it. And I don't think it articulated it as well as it could have in the last, 10 pages or so. Part of it was supposed to be that Abe had begun to have this relationship with I can't even remember who, the sheriff.
I forget his name too.
But anyway, there was this whole thing with him having a child, and he didn't like the way Abe was looking at these other children. Mm-hmm. He thought he was judging them and everything. And I just felt like there was moments, if you'd moved them to a different location, they could have been more thematically relevant to what was going on, and it just would have hit home some things much punchier than it did. It ended up being a thing where, I sat there and went, it's all there, it's just, it hasn't pulled itself together strongly enough.
I agree with that. That was certainly in contention for me, my least favorite. However, I'm going to say Get the Lobster number 4.
Okay.
Because we had 3 months, February, March, and April, Get the Lobster.
Oh, the gap.
And there was a 1 month gap. And it was different when there was the 2 month gap before the finale, because the finale wrapped things up. But there was this month of no story, and then it came back, and I felt like nothing happened in that issue. And I remember reading it and saying, I waited a month for this. Just nothing. I felt like there was no forward progression whatsoever, and that really frustrated me.
Okay, because for me that was the one that was connecting all the dots. It was the one where the penny drop was like, oh, this is the Cassaro brothers from Prometheus, and yeah, the Iron Prometheus. And so, you know, like I was connecting all those dots all of a sudden.
See, while I appreciate that and I enjoy that stuff, to me, like when I like to put my speculator hat on, when I like to connect the dots, to me that's all stuff going forward. It doesn't so much appeal to me when it's stuff happening in the past. I know that's silly, and I know it's a bit of it's a laziness thing on my part, maybe, but that's how I feel with it.
No, everyone likes different things.
Yeah. All right, let's start talking a little bit about 2015. We know a few things that are going to be happening. We know that we are going to wrap up the Hellboy and the BPRD 1952 story. We know that Flesh and Stone is going to run in BPRD through March. We know Frankenstein Underground is starting in March.
Yes, that's going to be awesome.
Let's talk about that for a second. How tied into the, quote, regular Mignola stuff do you feel that's going to be?
I think it's one where you'll really want to have read Witchfinder, especially the first arc.
Okay. Yeah, my goal is to be caught up by then, for sure.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, Witchfinder, it kind of, like, you know, all the Hollow Earth stuff was there, but it was the one that kind of said, okay, now, let's explore it. You know, it started unfolding it in all these interesting ways and went into details, and, you know, that's pretty much where Frankenstein monster is going.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything about that book that you feel like we'll be connecting to the current events, or is this going to be more filling in the backstory of the BPRD?
I'm not really sure. Like, the way Mignola's talking about it, I think there's something really big in this that's going to pay off long term, but obviously, you know, he's not talking about what it is.
Right.
But yeah, certainly, actually, there's. It seems like it could have connections to, what's it called? Howard's Goldenar.
Right.
You know, the caveman version of him, because it was something I realized when I was putting together the Hell Notes that's actually coming out tomorrow. He's in North America, you know, like a long time ago, but the sword that he has in his hand, that actually gets found in the continent of Africa. And so at some point, him or his tribe is going to have to travel to Africa. They're not going to cross the seas, most likely, because they're so far in the past, and that, you know, it seems like a crazy voyage. And my feeling is they're probably going to go underground into the Hollow Earth.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense, actually. Huh. I like that.
Yeah, it was one of those things where it hit me, and I was like, oh my god, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that's a really fun place to go.
Mm.
I like that a lot. Now you have me excited for that. I mean, I was excited already for a Mignola Ben Stenbeck book. You know, that's Ben Stenbeck's one of the more promising up and coming artists for the book. I'm also excited about the prospect of 1953, which we've heard teased a little bit. Tell the listener what you just told me about the significance of that year.
Well, it's going to be two arcs, 1953, not one. So it'd be two shorter stories. But the thing with 1953 is Hellboy said in a story somewhere that that was the happiest time of his life. You know, this is him traveling around Britain with Professor Broom and Harry Middleton from Darkness Calls, and just going to places, looking at things, and having fun.
That's such a cool, that sounds so great to me.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is something I've been waiting for ages, because we've heard, like, Hellboy talk about, oh, I was with Broom at this place, and this place, and this place, but we've never seen him in the field with Professor Broom, like, ever.
That's a really good point. I never really put that together, but you're absolutely right. Yeah, wow. Okay. So, yeah, between that and getting a couple more issues of Hellboy and Hell, it looks like we're going to have a more Hellboy-centric year, which is a good thing for me.
Yeah, it's. I think it's Well, the first arc of 1953 is two issues, so that'll definitely be coming out next year.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's what, two issues of Hellboy and Hell, two issues of that, and four more of 1952.
Yeah, that's absolutely great. I'm very excited about that. What do we know about BPRD proper stories coming next year? We know Flesh and Stone wraps up in March. What is known about the arcs going on after that?
Hold on, I need to look up the title for this one because I get it muddled around
every
single time. Is it
the Nowhere, Nothing, Never?
That may be the correct... I don't know. I get those three words muddled around.
That is according to the Hellboy Wiki.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that'd be correct.
Mm-hmm. What do we know about that arc?
We know that it's going to be about Johan. We know that it's going to be a big deal. And then we know nothing at all.
That's kind of fun, though. It's kind of fun to be so in the dark about it.
Yeah, I like that. It's going to be interesting, I think, because, well, you know, I there's always that pattern of the third... story always ends up being, you know, a big one because it's eventually going to be the last one of an omnibus. So you can kind of see that pattern emerge where, like, you know, Reign of the Black Flame was a big one. So you look forward to this one and go, oh, this is going to be a big arc.
That's clever. I never really put that. See, I did so much catching up with my reading that I have a hard time remembering where trades end, where omnibi end. You know,
yeah, I have to keep track of that stuff.
Yeah, well, you're Mr. Hellboy.
Otherwise, it's a nightmare. Yeah, no, exactly. I actually have like a spreadsheet that I have to look at every now and then to remind myself. Because otherwise, I end up just quoting the wrong thing and making an idiot out of myself.
I don't think anyone will consider you an idiot for misquoting a small detail, but I appreciate all the hard work that you do and how seriously you take it all. What do we know about anything past that arc? Do we have any clue about things that might be happening?
No, a bit. That's as far as we know. Like, they announced that during that whole 13 Days of Hellboy stuff.
Right.
And it was just a... I believe it was just a title that they mentioned, but that was it.
Yeah. We were talking before about something that was tweeted out by Cameron Stewart, which is he was hoping to do more Ashley Strode when he finishes up the Fight Club project he's currently working on.
Yeah, That was a very exciting tweet.
Yeah, we were kind of talking before we started recording about how both of us don't understand why we love that character so much, but we both do. What is it about that? Because she's only in that one mini, right? Exorcism. That's
She's appeared a couple of times. She appeared in Abe Sapien flashback, and she's also appeared back.
Right,
in,
I forgot about the flashback. Yeah.
So yeah, she's been around for quite a while, but always in the background. That was the first time she really stepped up to the foreground.
Mm-hmm. For me, I think it was, you know, one of the things I love about the Mignola-verse is there are certain things that you don't realize are in play until they are in play. Like for vampires, right? Like vampires, something that was never really discussed, and all of a sudden there was BPRD Vampire, and that was suddenly a whole big thing. And there was the Pickens County Horror, you know. And I think the same thing with Exorcism, where it felt like, oh, okay, so there are demonic possessions in the sort of traditional sense we've read about in the past happening here, too. Okay, that's really cool. And I like the idea of Ashley Strode being...
an apprentice.
Yeah, exactly. Just, she wasn't a master of anything yet. She was just learning. I think that was great.
Mm. I really appreciated that. Seeing her with that book at the end, you know, Mignola always says he makes his characters stranger, and you can already see, you know, like, she's beginning to get strange.
Yeah. Yeah. So besides the stuff we know, what are you hoping for in 2015?
I'm really hoping for more Witchfinder. I loved that last arc. It's gonna be interesting, though, because, the next year is a major step for him. It's when he comes across Vladimir Gurescu from Wake the Devil, the vampire in that story.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, that's a major story. It has to be told. But at the same time, it's so similar to Anno Dracula that I don't think the writer will return.
Okay.
You know, like, just because, you know, it's too similar to territory he's done before. I can't think of his name. It's frustrating me that I can't think of his name.
I'll get it in a second. It is... Which one? Is it Kim Newman?
Yeah, Kim Newman, that's it.
And Maura McHugh.
Yeah, Maura McHugh, of course, didn't write Anno Dracula. And,
right, yeah.
So I'm hoping at least she sticks around for the next one. I actually got to speak to her a little bit, you know, like on Twitter and emailing her and everything. And yeah, she's really a big fan of the universe. And it's when you got someone with that much passion for it, you know, you want to see them keep doing it.
Obviously, yeah, it's great. Has there been any rumblings of more Witchfinder?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I mean, you know, like, it'd be nice, but so far all we're really left with is the cliffhanger at the end of the last book. Mm-hmm.
See, my personal pipe dream that I don't see happening, but would be great, would be to have more vampire stuff this year.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, actually. That's, I don't see it happening because, you know, they're just so busy with Casanova and everything.
Right.
But yeah, I would love to see Fabio Moon and Gabriel Barr do another one.
I think after they're done with Casanova, we have a better chance.
Yeah.
Although I still don't know when that would be. One of the really exciting things to me about the extended Mignola-verse, excuse me, is Mignola's propensity to give people things to play with. Like he said, vampires now, that's pretty much in the twins' camp. When they want to do more, they can. Ashley Strode, that's a Cameron Stewart thing. When he gets around to it, he'll do more. And I think it's a great way to sort of collect creators to be able to do stuff without having, without losing the thread of the main story. You know, you can keep BPRD proper, moving full steam ahead, telling this huge epic story, and then you can also have these smaller, more intimate tales happening on the fringes. But when you take it all together, it just makes the universe so much better.
Yeah, it's definitely stronger than the sum of its parts.
Yeah. And then I guess the last thing we're going to talk about before wrapping up here, this flew by the way. This conversation absolutely flew by. Is there anything that happened in 2014 that you think is going to be particularly important going forward?
In 2015?
Yeah, what happened this year that we're going to be looking at in a year or two and saying, oh, that was the big changing point? Like, that's when things got really interesting.
I don't know if anything's going to happen with this in 2015, but it's just sort of something that's sitting in the background, and you know it's got to be important at some point, because they brought it back up again in The Devil's Wings, was the Sledgehammer armor.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, they had that huge arc about it, you know, at the beginning of the year, the Lightning War, mm-hmm. and then just having it sitting there, it's just like, yeah, that's going to come back.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see Redding in action.
Yeah, I think that'll definitely be something. The other thing I think, you know, one of the things I love is that every now and then there will be a character that feels like they're being underserved, and then all of a sudden you'll have an entire arc where that person is the star.
Yeah.
And I think...
Actually, go ahead. I was just... Sorry. You mentioned Johan being in the background earlier, I think, and I was just... That was something that, like, in he appeared in The Long Death, right? That was, like, a big arc for him, and he's just been sitting in the background for ages. And it's just, like, you know something's going to happen there. You know, like, you know something big's on its way. It has to be.
Yeah, The Long Death was quite some time ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he's just, every single time you see him now, it's like, you know, a character will deliver a line, and you get that, like, that blank, glassy face staring back, and he says a line, and he's like, there's something simmering in that guy.
That was... February and March of April of 2012. Mm. So that's a long time ago. But anyway, I think that Ponya is due for a big arc.
Yeah.
I think she has been so important but so underused lately. And I think it's going to be an arc with her why is the name escaping me? She shot Abe.
Phoenix.
Phoenix, thank you, yeah. I think we're going to see a Phoenix Ponya arc soon.
Hope so. I'd like that. I don't know, because, like, Ponya's one of those characters that, you know, every year I think, this is going to be her year, and it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've been sitting on that character for a while. I mean, like, it was back in King of Fear. They mentioned that, Ponya will be walking within a year's time. You know, like, she's restoring that fast, and she hasn't started walking, and I'm sort of sitting there going, she's fully capable of walking. She's faking it.
It's funny because I feel like a lot of us have our sort of pet characters. Like, for for David, it's Varvara. How that's the character. He is convinced that Varvara is going to wind up being good in the end. he's fully convinced of that.
I think it's like you can have the most evil person in the world, you know, but when she goes home, she still loves her husband, you know? And right. I think Varvara is like that. You know, she cares about things. She loves things, but she's evil.
I agree. But for me, sort of, especially lately, my pet character has been Johan. And I just, every time he's around, I feel like it elevates the issues, and it's really, to me, he is absolutely due for something huge. So Nowhere, yeah. Nothing, Never is very exciting for me.
Yeah, especially that, it is one of those, third books in a row kind of thing. You know it has to be something big. You know he's in the lead, and he's been simmering for so long. It sounds like it's going to be enormous.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to briefly mention before we wrap up here?
I swear I've probably missed something, but no, I can't think of anything. There was that thing actually in Horsepower. Column they have at the back of the issues of Dark Horse's comics. Mike Mignola did one of those in November, and he mentioned that he's doing another series. It's not in the Hellboy universe, and it's a bit unclear, but I don't think it's in the Baltimore universe either. It's something new, and that's coming next year.
Oh, that is interesting.
Yeah, that almost skipped my mind. I can't believe that.
This is not at all Mignola-verse related, but do you ever think he'll go back to the big two for anything, outside of a cover here or there?
Well, see, that's the thing. You say go back to, but I was never on board. I grew up without them, so it just...
For Mignola, is he ever going to go back and work in the big two again?
Right, sorry. No, I don't see that that happening. No, he's having too much fun on his own.
I agree with you, and, well, if given the choice, I would rather him stay in his own universe, but I think he could do an incredible miniseries once every 5 years for somebody else, just as an artist.
I think he's one of those characters. There's a lot of things you could say. Oh, put him on that, and it would be great, and it totally would. But I just don't see him doing it.
I agree.
It'd be incredibly cool, though. Yeah. I mean, if only we could clone him.
Exactly. Anyway, if folks want to read your work, of course, check out MultiversityComics.com. Hell Notes is Mark's baby. It is fantastic. You're also going to have going up. Is it in January? The big wrap up for the year.
This is our first wrap up, and then we have a kind of preview of next year going up in January, which is going to be interesting. I'm talking to so many creators on that. It's awesome.
Yeah. And you can also find Mark on Twitter. What is your Twitter handle?
It's probably Mark Tweedow.
I'm not
very creative. No, I don't need to type it. it's probably at Mark Tweedow.
I'm looking this up
now. I'm not that inventive, so yeah.
You can find me on Twitter at Brian Needs a Nap. You can always find a lot of Mignola content and a lot of just comics content on MultiversityComics.com. It is at Mark Tweedell, by the way. You can find us at MultiversityComics.com. We really enjoy doing this stuff, and hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode, and maybe we'll try and check in, once or twice a year and do this a little bit more frequently and talk about, just what we're going to be seeing from the Mignolaverse. Because even though it is just a couple of books, the books are so dense and so well put together that I feel like we could talk for hours if given the chance. We're trying to keep this nice and tight. So, for Mark, I'm Brian. Good night.
Good night.